Hey, I'm R. Allen Brooks. I am the host of this podcast.
And I am Dele Johnson. I am editor and producer.
So he does all the hard grunt work. So this episode is Leo Castaneda. He's a Colombian video game developer and artist. And, you know, I got to say for myself with video games, like I've kind of been in and out of them my whole life. But the last one I got addicted to was Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
The reason that I don't get too deep into them is because when I play a video game, I am consumed by it. Like, I have to beat it with every character. Mm-hmm. I have to go through every scenario. And I spend months on it. And at the end, I have nothing to show but hurt thumbs. So I try to keep it to, like, Tetris, because it's finite.
Sure, you know? Sure. You're not playing the games that are, you know, so many are online now. And you're playing with other people. You're mic'd up. You're talking trash. You're strategizing. I never got deep into that level.
I would never write anything if I did that, you know. That would really be my whole life. But as somebody who only occasionally engages with video games, it's really dope to hear how somebody's journey as a creator, like how they got into it, how they found their way, how did they even learn like the technical aspects of it. Like, it's fascinating kind of, you know, just to hear what his journey was in that world and as somebody who's creating his own game.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought there were a lot of parallels between the both of you as creators, being independent, being self-taught, and pursuing your passions on your own terms.
Yeah. So his game is on Steam.
Yeah, or it will be releasing it'll be rolling out on Steam soon. There might be like a beta version that's playable right now. It's called Levels and Bosses, post-apocalyptic sort of world. Some puzzle solving, some, you know, general exploration of a landscape that he's created.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. So, I mean, you can see like the previews of it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think you guys will dig this interview. Remember, please, to share, tell people about this podcast. We work hard on it. We would like more people to listen to it. And, you know, subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast to. There's the video version, there's the podcast version. Subscribe in all the places, do all the things, write reviews. Thank you, and enjoy it. Welcome to How Art is Born, a podcast from the Museum of Contemporary Art, Denver, about the origins of artists and their creative and artistic practices. I'm your host, R. Allen Brooks, artist, writer, and professor. Today I'm joined by a Miami-based video game director and multimedia artist, Leo Castaneda. Say hello.
Hello, MCA member. Hello,
Allen. Oh, no problem. I appreciate you being here. So, start off, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do?
I was originally born in Colombia, in Cali, Colombia. To a family of artists, and so I grew up around this kind of Latin American surrealism and abstraction, but at the same time, the global media of games and anime, to a certain extent, comics, but not as much as you, definitely, like games is more my thing. Basically that catalyze like all the work that I've been doing, the kind of upbringing where I then met my parents, like couldn't find work in Colombia. We ended up moving to the States. Eventually I went to like an art high school in Miami. Eventually to college in New York, to Cooper Union, on a crossroads that I could have ended up at going to college more for entertainment design. Like I was kind of in the crossroads of like fine art and entertainment design to draw for movies and video games, and I ended up going.
Well, let me bring you back just a little bit. So you're talking about you grew up in a family of artists.
Yeah.
You said, so were they all painters? Because you mentioned abstract and what kind of art?
They were mostly, my grandmother would do like these Amazonian abstract paintings, and my parents met in architecture school, but my mom she was more like into fashion and character design, so she would do more like illustrations and ink drawings. Okay. And my dad was more into abstract painting with architecture. So yeah, it was kind of interesting because I kind of felt a little bit like it was like I at some point felt like I was not necessarily pushed into it, but like highly encouraged in a in a way that the my identity kind of felt constructed to a certain extent through that. But yeah, I think if it wasn't,
that's an interesting. It's an interesting thing. I want to. I guess I want to hear a little more about when you said your identity was constructed. Do you feel like it was like strongly influenced by your family having all that art? Or was it something where you went down a path and had to decide if it was really you?
Yeah, the second one. Because at the same time, I always enjoyed doing art. Like since I was a little kid, like I would draw on my dad's lap. Like actually the first memory that I have of art making is being in my dad's lap and telling him like, draw Batman. And he would draw Batman, and I'd be like, "Draw Batman again," and he would draw it again, and it's like, "Draw it again," and then I'd be like, and then I would try, and I would get kind of frustrated that at age three I wasn't like at his level, but I guess to like not get too caught up in like everyone has a childhood, but like and not get too caught up in it. If it's okay.
Yeah,
I think when I was in college, I found myself, like everyone, going through an artist block in the fine arts school, like kind of being in a situation of almost overthinking art. And like, because the school that I went to, it's called Cooper Union in New York, like it was a really good school, but it was a place where that definitely was more conceptual, which was good for me to learn. And I really value it, but sometimes people would like you would have to show your work and almost emotively create it and be ready for them to explain it in all its conceptual layers the next day, which I thought was a little challenging. So for me to be able to bring back the fun aspect or like the enjoyment that I felt, let's say from ages 3 to 17 in art making.
Yeah,
that's when I started bringing in the concepts of video games and like world building into the work, like around my third year of school, to kind of feel like fuse the concepts of fine art with the idea of like concept art in games, where you create characters and worlds, which is very similar to comics. Like you basically have like a kind of a written foundation, and then or like image foundation, and then you kind of start like combining things. So
it's interesting just to hear about how you had this pure love of art from, you said, age 3 to age 17. Then when you sort of pursued the academic portions of it, it carried you a bit away from the things that you enjoyed, and you had to like find your way back to it. I'm certain you're not the only person who went through that. So I just wonder, at that point where you were questioning whether art was your idea, whether it's something you wanted to do, how you bridged that gap. You know, you said you started to reach into like the conceptual video game stuff that you liked. Can you talk a little bit more about what that process was and how you found your way back to that?
So I made some paintings. I kind of find myself doing some paintings that were fusing abstract painting but like optical illusions to a certain extent. Like and the first of those I called just red versus blue, which was just kind of thinking of like Halo games or like the wars and video games. So it's like this situation where you have these two sides that are not really questioning why they're against each other, and they're just kind of out to destroy each other, basically. And so I made a painting that looked kind of like that. It almost looked like these almost like mutually assured destruction style meets like missile barrage meets Dragon Ball, like Kamehameha against Kamehameha, just like and when I did that painting, I was like, okay, this was fun. It was like, that was like a childhood drawing of I don't know, some kind of scenario with characters battling meets my now New York art school education, plus some of the abstraction that I grew up around, and also like the abstract paintings where when you're like really using the brush and like really moving, like that also felt like a really nice like active experience. So I did that piece, but then that piece became a artistic dead end after that. Like, do I make just a series that is different ways of continuing that? And then I also did then another piece where I was thinking, okay, maybe let's think about video games as a starting point. But so I put speakers behind a painting and made some sound. I used the composition of like Sonic the Hedgehog style games where you have the 2D side scroller composition, and and with the sound you would guide the eye around the piece. So that was another experiment. But then I thought like, oh, okay, well, this is like, do I just do, you know, 1990s, 1980s 2D side scrollers with sound? Like, how can I have more freedom to like really not feel constricted by a formula, but just be able to world build and enhance ideas of what gaming could be and also what art could be for myself, but not feel the pressure of having to figure it out in the moment.
Right.
So where it finally catalyzed the work that I'm still doing now. So it's been since 2009 to like 14 years.
Okay, so you were still in school at that point when you were doing those paintings.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So how did your teachers, how did the program react? Because that is a definite change from what you were doing before, right?
Yeah, there was skepticism. There was a sense that video games were not really art at the moment. So, but there was some encouragement. Like, So when the series actually catalyzed, it was more using the structure of world building and games. So like the levels and bosses progression of being in one level, and then you have a personified version of that level as a boss, and then that would lead to another level, to another level. Like that's when I realized like, okay, that can lead to almost endless art creation. But some of the first paintings that I did in that scenario, I would almost like type, I would write the letters at the bottom, like level one or something. And then I would get some criticism that it would be like too defining of what the piece would be, or why am I looking at video games and not other forms of like digital culture? Like what about video games is so interesting? There was almost a sense that even if there would be, let's say, Corey Archangel or different artists out there in the world that had reference games already, that there was a sense that it was a lower art form or something.
Right.
But
comic books have had that going on for years.
Yeah, which is funny because then it gets co-opted by fine art as like, ooh, we discovered it finally.
right.
At some point. But and nowadays, they zoom through the journey of insisting on that work. Nowadays it's become much more accepted within the fine art world, and the independent video games have grown up also a ton.
I gotta say it's really interesting because bringing in video games help you rediscover what you liked about art, which is really cool. And to see that that you've made your way to a profession in video games. First of all, that's cool. I like to hear what was that journey from making a series of paintings to finding your way to working within the video game industry?
So basically, by the time I was in my senior year of college, I started thinking of like the active viewership potential of games, the more an art installation. So I did, and I had zero digital skills except for Photoshop and Illustrator. So I did some sculptures where you kind of like inspired by arcade machines, and I was excited about that. Started doing some also like more performance type works where I would create costumes of the characters that I was creating and have friends do different performances.
Nice.
And then my best friend in Cooper Union was actually a comic book artist. So he started an indie publishing company, and he challenged me to turn the paintings of the first level into a narrative. So then I got 10 paintings, kind of put them together. Like, you know, he gave me a Scott McCloud Understanding Comics and gave me,
right.
and gave me like some tips on how to do a sequential narrative. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is like doing the storyboard for a story. Is it going to be a performance one day, like an opera or something, or maybe it could be a video game one day. But, but then I had zero digital skills. So I, or like digital, like 3D creation skills. So it took me a couple of years when I was like, okay, well, maybe one day, you know, I could save up to work with a programmer or, and then I just thought, okay, let me just download the software and go on YouTube and start learning. A couple years later, and then yeah, like 2013, I started just learning through the internet, through forums. I started working with Unity first, which was free, but then the Unreal Engine became free in 2013 as well. And Unreal didn't have the limitation of knowing how to code in the traditional sense with the lines. Like there was a system called Blueprints. So I basically started. Learning how to do that, started translating the paintings and the worlds into 3D environments. Started also just learning the tools and creating like virtual reality experiments as part of the world building, and also just as part of the learning process of using the, because VR is done with the same programs.
Right.
And integrating VR headsets into sculptures as an extension of the kind of like arcade machines meet art installations. And then over time, eventually, let's say if the comic book was, or like the 10-page graphic novel storyboard of the first level was 2011, it took me till 2018 to have the skills to start creating that level digitally.
Wow.
And, but then by then I was still like, okay, well, to be able to actually program a whole ability system and an actual game, I can't do it alone. So I started applying to grants locally. I had moved back to Miami already, but I started applying to grants and, you know, lots of rejections, but then eventually some started coming in to work with programmers and asking around and eventually... skipping ahead to where I'm at now, like over time, just through friend references and you know, eventually, like, I mean, it's not like I have like a big team right now. It's three core members, including myself, one programmer that's in Colombia, my partner that's a producer on the game. And, but then it's like, maybe seven others, including two sound designers and another programmer. Anyways,
that's really cool.
Yeah, so it grew over time thanks to arts grants, and I also taught at a university for 3 years and saved half my salary for it.
So
yeah, but it's definitely not easy, and it's taken a long time to learn, but I feel like it's a rewarding experience overall. And, yeah.
I love hearing about that, man. You know, I mean, you're talking about the small team. I was thinking, I read For Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, the effects team was four people.
Wow.
You know? Yeah, right. And so, you know, I think we're at this interesting place where, of course, we have, you know, AI knocking at our door for everything we create artistically, but we also have... the technology where very small teams can accomplish really big things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gives an interesting place for some stories that haven't been told to be told. So I'm excited about that aspect of things. The Museum of Contemporary Art Denver has a robust schedule of summer programming at our Freeze Building in downtown Denver and the Holiday Theater in the Highlands, from rooftop concerts with local musicians to offbeat interactive lectures with mismatched subjects. B-Side Music Fridays runs every Friday, July 7th through August 25th, 2023, at the MCA Denver Freeze Building. Mixed Taste runs every Wednesday, July 12th through August 16th, 2023, at MCA Denver at the Holiday Theater.
The technology was not where it's at now in terms of a free game engine. I mean, free after, and then you pay them 5% after $1 million. Like if it wasn't for Unreal Engine existing as a free software, like 20 years ago, independent game designers would have to create their own engine. So you would need to invest thousands to hundreds of thousands of dollars just to have the structure that would be able to house the the technology. And now they just, you know, it's like much more open source.
Right. Well, it's an interesting thing, man, because, you know, even though I'm not a dedicated video gamer, the world of comics and video games are so parallel that I, you know, I end up hearing like some of the things of how things work, the crafting of stories and stuff like that. But I think for people who are listening, it would be interesting to talk about the process of making a game for you, like from beginning to end. Like, do you start with story? Do you start with kind of a concept? Like, what's it like?
Well, for me, I kind of start with the intention, and that intention, well, first was, combining fine art and games and the concepts of fine art and games, concepts and aesthetics. And then if one goes deeper into that, then, you know, there's philosophies, there's like, you know, surrealism, abstraction, there's a whole mixture of things. And then over time, that intention was also, at some point I'll grow up to the point that I can say something that's deeper about what interactivity and games could evolve to. But yeah, when I started it at 20 or 21 years old, I was not at that point. But I think over time, the more games I played and the more I lived and the more I met people to collaborate with, the more the intention of the game is to go... I mean, also the intention of the game was to challenge what a level and a boss would be, like the hierarchical systems of game of games, and like the structure of antagonism of games. So so with that in mind, it's basically a process of doing drawings with that intention of also worlds where sentience is shared across landscapes, technology, and beings. So like where it's almost like animistic worlds. So with that in mind, like reimagining the hierarchical and antagonism structure of games and having worlds that are interconnected, and having the aesthetics that are merging like surrealism and abstraction, and allowing myself to kind of have the freedom of creating whatever I want. and that oscillates. It's not always in freedom mode. Sometimes we create our own structures that contain endless exploration of artistic development. But with that in mind, it's basically letting myself draw and paint freely to kind of catalyze the world building. And then getting that and then continuing in Unreal or Maya, Mudbox, and doing the 3D models, sometimes using the textures from those models, from the paintings and drawings into the 3D. So it's like a very, very much a feedback loop that starts generating from the digital to analog process. And then that's that aspect. And now with the team, I'll meet with a programmer once a week, and then we'll talk about the interaction aspects. So it's like, so a lot of the drawings are also mapping out what the interactions would be. I'll talk about that with the programmer. He'll do the base, and he'll leave it with connections for me to do the animations and the visual effects on top. And I'll do the simple programming or simpler programming that connects to his more complex programming. Anyways,
okay.
It's kind of like the loop.
Yeah. So just to make sure, like, you know, tell me if I get it right, but the programming seems to, so you start with the concepts, you have all the art, you come to the programmer, they provide sort of a technological structure for the game to work.
Yeah.
And then you're adding back in all the aesthetic portions. Is that right?
Yeah. The aesthetics portions, and then it's almost like if you're in your house and there's the programmer is almost doing all the back end electrical work, but I still have to design what the outlet or the switch looks like and what the lamp looks like, and and know how to do the electrical aspect to connect to the electricity. For example, the hardest thing to do in the game that was way out of my league was a ability system. Like Unreal Engine has an innate ability system, and in video games you have that a lot, like especially role playing games, where you have a character progression and different items and different abilities that build up over time, and that's been something that I had thought about for a while, but then once through the DIY, just working alone, once I hit the ability system, I was like, okay, I can't do this alone. And also, I think it's such a place for exploration of what a game could be. For example, like the main abilities that we're working with, or some of the main abilities include camouflage, laser-based communication, and electromagnetic sensors, switching of embodiments. So anyways, like the beings in this universe, that could be a alien universe or like a post-human universe, it's kind of open-ended, but they're constantly using light and vibration and different ways to adapt to the landscape. And they don't even eat. They harness kinetic energy from the landscape to in a mutualistic way to be able to kind of to be able to regenerate, and that's another of the concepts of the game, like how to create a game system that is non-destructive, but that allows for destruction because there's a choice of it, but it makes it way less effective than a mutualistic or sustainable interaction. So that's been another of the aspects that's been really cool to grow over time. And with that too, my partner Lauren is a writer and cultural organizer, and film producer. It's been really great to work with her because she's always thinking of how like organizing systems work. So it's been cool, to like be able to talk to her every day, and to have her as part of the project as well.
Okay, so we go design, then programming. And then the next step is the stuff you just described, where you are figuring out these problems and adding all the aesthetics. So then after that, is it done or what's the next steps?
To play tests. Because of, kind of the project growing up through the art world or through art exhibitions. Art exhibitions have been really good for playtesting, so they kind of provide deadlines, and then a bunch of people get to try the game. Even if it's in process, like it's been really good to get feedback in that way, and then reiterating, like it's. I mean, there's a. I can send you a link later, but there's a short game that I made. Through a museum in Colombia and a game jam, like in a way that it's online, but the main game, Levels and Bosses, is still to be released next year and on Steam. And so I've never actually experienced the feeling of just launching something out there to like thousands of people.
That short one something that people can go play now?
Yeah. It's in Spanish, it's playable on itch.io. It's called Jardín Oculto, Estación Jardín Oculto, which just means like gestation, hidden garden, even though hidden garden sounds better in Spanish. but it's basically almost like it's in the Levels and Bosses universe of like these kind of sentient sculptures almost, you pilot a drone that can collect water and light, and then you build a sculpture garden. Like by just finding seeds, and then you build up this garden of sculptures, and at first it feels great, like you're just building your garden. But then if you overbuild, it becomes a lot of management because you end up with like 20 sculptures that are always asking. Eventually, they're all asking for water and for light. Anyways,
if you send a link to it, I'm sure Dele will can include it in the notes for the episode, so people who are listening can check it out if they want to.
Okay, cool. Yeah, definitely do that. And we just launched last week the Steam page for Levels and Bosses that will release episodically starting next year. So
nice.
That'll be cool to get some feedback on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so what you're working on presently is not an extension of that game, is something else, is that right?
No, it's still
it's the bosses.
Yeah. I mean, the gardening game was in the same universe. Like, it shares aesthetics. But in the Levels and Bosses universe, there's definitely the ability to like switch bodies into drones or sculptures and different things like that. So it's almost like if you have a, and when I say drone, it doesn't look like the four helicopters or something. It looks more like because another of the abilities in the main game that's key is the ability of using touch with different intensities. So and touch that creates a vibrational field around the hand, or the hand, the appendage that is the hand, and that can be intensified the base version. So there's in that other game, there's a drone. The drone sculpture is almost like just the head and the arm, and so it's like a little floating head arm drone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it's interesting because you've been talking about combining the sensibilities of fine art with the video game stuff. So I don't know. I mean, where you are in the process right now, are you happy with how those things are melding? Is it challenging to keep that kind of that blend going? What's that like?
I'm overall happy with how it's going, but it has been a situation that, I had a solo show last year at a place called Locust Projects here in Miami, and it was a really good kind of showcase of what it could be like to do a multimedia experience with, like, I designed gaming chairs and wallpapers and tapestries, and everything was kind of combining the aesthetics of a game conference booth and an art installation, and I showed the concept art for the game and paintings. Anyways, it was all the media, but the main thing that I learned there is that the game itself kind of suffered because I was too scattered up, like working on 8 different artworks at the same time. and 8 could be even more. And even though I had help with sound design, like I didn't do this, I collaborated with others in that aspect. And anyways, I was able to use the grants to have people help me, but it still felt like the game suffered. So where I'm at now is just trying to minimize the fine art exhibitions as much as possible for the next year or two, and just finally get the game out there. that's where I'm at right now. But the art exhibitions have been really great to prototype the aesthetics, to get the playtesting. But in order for the crossover, so that it's not just an art game within an art context, which you have different situations within art exhibition context where you put a lot of that is like relational aesthetics, like this artist recruits her up in Asia, like cooking in a gallery, or doing playing tennis in a gallery, those kind of situations are almost commenting, or let's say even with comics, like there's artists that would do art as a comic for a gallery, a museum, or art influenced by comics in a museum. But my goal is not to have it be something that stays in the museum because or the art gallery, and it's expensive. I feel like the accessibility of independent video games is something that's $0 to $20 and can be afforded by people all over the world is something that it encourages me to try to get the game out there in that format instead of only within the insular structures of fine art. So
yeah, that's a cool vision.
MTA Denver at the Holiday Theater is a year-round performance and event space that is an extension of the Museum of Contemporary Art Denver. The Holiday is home to a spectrum of creative expression, including original productions, live music, film screenings, artist talks, and serial programming like Mixed Taste and Cinema Azteca, as well as performances and events presented by other cultural organizations. The theater is also available for private rentals. Visit mcadenver.org/holiday-theater to learn more.
Okay, I want to ask about fear. So in your process, when you're creating, what is it like when you feel fear, and how do you find your way forward?
I mean, the getting the game out there is definitely the biggest fear, and will it get completed is the biggest fear. So there are two active things that I mentioned like 20 seconds ago that have not been done yet. So that I've been working on for many, many years, and sometimes I'll have friends like, hey, like, when is it gonna be done? Like, if you don't get it done, it's never gonna get done. And I'm like, no, but you know, it takes a while to refine, like, better delayed than never. And I think that would probably be that, and surviving as an artist are the number one fears that I have. I'd say like that one exhibition that I was like all eggs in one basket in multimedia. Right. Like I saved up different grants and salaries and everything and just basically put everything into it. And then it's the kind of thing that after that I was like, oh my gosh, like if nothing arrives financially, like I'll have to give up on making the game, or like give up on being an artist, move to my parents' house or something. Like, I think as an artist, like when it's constantly oscillating between these, this like unstable, income, situations. And I think I really learned to kind of be a little smarter about the budgeting of,
that's key.
So, and unfortunately there was another grant that arrived from the Knight Foundation early in their year that was able to kind of stabilize me, but also I have to be, it was a good lesson to kind of, grow the project, but also not forget about my own, health and survival. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, so when you're facing that fear, like what is, you know, how do you mobilize in it? You know, like how do you make sure that it doesn't stop you?
Meditation and meditating, breathing and or like art making to a certain extent, it's kind of those things. It goes back to the art as a thing that is, that gives life purpose and feels good to do, that it's not a burden. I would much rather be doing that and have the fear of how am I gonna pay rent for, you know, like next month or the month after that, than to have the fear that time is passing by and I'm not doing art, and thus like not having that experience and the artistic growth, I think. Because in the end, even if it's challenging, it feels very good and it's rewarding and it gives a sense of meaning that I
like. So when you do art that is, when you do art that's supposed to renew you past fear, is it art that is outside of the project you're working on so you can kind of like get a clean slate, or is it related to what you're working on?
It's usually 99% of the time related to what I'm working on, because the structure of the levels situation could make it so that absolutely every artwork that I make, no matter what, can go back to it. So it could be that, let's say like right now, if I look to my right, my partner, she left a perfume bottle on the table. So I could be inspired by that perfume bottle, and you know, like this, the setup here of just different everyday items and do a still life about them just to feel good. But then, yeah. But then if I imagine the perspective of a tiny being the size of an ant around the perfume bottle, it turns into a city or something. So it could be this situation where, it's almost like, going back to a situation of letting go of expectation of this has to be this art piece has to be part of the development of the canon. And actually, I really want to try to undo the situation, like the ideas of what of a canon narrative. But but anyways, any kind of deviation and just having fun with something could end up going back into the main project. But it could also just be, you know, an experiment that just doesn't fully work out. But usually 99% of the time it is. It's just like moving on to a future world that I'm not working on digitally, just kind of sketching it out or just researching on what's going on in the world and doodling.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so, Leo, we're going to start to wrap up. There are two questions that I ask to wrap up, but one of them is, what is your geeky pleasure? What's inspiring you artistically these days? Could be another game, movies, books, music.
The number one thing is learning about AI and being scared of it and also excited by it. Yeah. And I feel like it's like the coming of the closest tangible thing to a god that we've ever experienced as a civilization besides nature. And respecting everyone's spirituality, but just the super intelligence arriving and how we relate to it is definitely the main thing that both the AI of YouTube will suggest to me to look at and that I choose to look into. And then and I'm always like kind of listening in the background and learning about like different games through YouTube and how games are made. But the oscillating fear and optimism and what are, you know, thinking about like how the world's gonna evolve with AI and how it's affecting artists. I also teach at a high school / college 3D animation class, and just like talking to students of how they're confronting AI, I think is it's a complex situation, but
no doubt.
Yeah.
All right, well, my other question is, where can people follow your stuff? Where's the best place for them to check out what you do?
For my fine artwork that does mix games, I have my personal website and Instagram. And then for my video game project, as I mentioned earlier, we just launched a Steam page. So Steam is the marketplace for games. So if you look up Levels and Bosses on Steam, you'll see the new trailer and the description of the game. And people can wish list it there, which is basically that. When it comes out episodically in about a year, they'll get an email and be like, hey, it's up.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything that you want to plug that you're working on? I mean, you've been talking about the game. Is there anything more specific about how people can check it out or support it?
No, that would be at the Steam. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Leo, I appreciate you talking to me. Yeah, it's been a cool conversation. It's a world that I'm always near, but not that deeply into. So it's great to hear like your journey and how you approach putting together games and all of that.
Thank you, Alan. And thank you, Deli. And thank you to NCA Denver. And yeah, I'm happy to share. And there's a lot of crossover with lots of other media. Yeah, like comics, exhibition design, filmmaking, architecture, like there's, it's like putting together a project that has a world of narrative and interactions and
right.
Yeah, so it's just a continuation of other media, and it's been done before, but through a very active participation of the viewer.
Special thank you to today's guest, Leo Castaneda. Thank you to the listeners. If you're not already, please be sure to subscribe to How Art is Born wherever you get your podcasts for more episodes. If you can, leave a review. It helps us out. Check out MCA Denver on YouTube and subscribe to the channel to watch the video version of this podcast and get behind-the-scenes clips from today's episode. How Art is Born is produced and edited by Dale Johnson and executive produced by Courtney Law. Additional thanks to Rachel Grammis for their work on marketing support for this episode.
Hey, if you love How Art is Born, there's another podcast that I think you should check out. It's called Off the Walls, and it's all about the people and stories behind Denver's street art. In each episode, you'll meet artists, activists, and other Denverites to explore some powerful murals around town and why they matter. Find Off the Walls from Denverite and Colorado Public Radio wherever you get podcasts.